A man asked God a question. What is 1,000 years like to you? God responded, like a second. He asked him, what is $1,000,000 like to you? God responded, like a penny. The man asked, can I have a penny? And God said, just a second. A father walks home to find his son sitting beside a roaring fire. He was furious since they didn't have a fireplace. A turtle was crossing the road when all of a sudden he was mugged by 2 snails. When the police showed up to ask him what had happened, he said, I don't know, it all happened so fast. Some psychologists and philosophers think that humor is our way of dealing with uncomfortable awkwardness or uncomfortable expectations. In all these stories, these jokes I just told you, there's an ending we didn't expect. And according to them, because we didn't expect it, it makes us uncomfortable, so we laugh. I disagree with them. God in the scriptures laughs. He has joy in it. He's not uncomfortable about our situations. So in this case, the absurdity of it brings us joy. And that's part of the joy of a joke. The expectations are not what we anticipated, and they're funny that way, to think of things in a different way. Jesus in today's gospel challenges our expectations as well. What did we expect from him? Did we expect to have this nice, prosperous life? Did we expect that everything would go well? What did we expect from God? A question that's worth pondering on our own. What do we expect from God? What do we expect from his church? What do we expect from this church? About a month ago, I went and toured the New Mormon Temple in Helena, and I was paying close attention to what was going on. They had a movie that explained not only the building of the temple, but another one that explained their faith. As I was watching it, it dawned on me. The Mormon church has an expectation. Their expectation is if you become Mormon, your family life will be great. You'll all work together, everything will be nice, everything will be perfect, and you'll be joined together for eternity. That's their expectation. That's their selling point for Mormonism. The pagan religion, the Wicca, also have an expectation. They believe that if you join them, then you'll get to meet all these deities and have control over your life and control of the world by these deities. That's what they expect. It doesn't work, but that's their expectation. As American peoples, we also have an expectation. As American peoples, we expect freedom. We expect the government will stand on our freedoms and we'll be able to live freely wherever we go. That's our expectation. So in response to that, what do we expect from God? What do we expect from his church? What do we expect from this church? Many people come to the Christian religion because they expect community. And frankly, that's kind of one of the things that is a hallmark of Christianity, that we are a strong community. We are bonded together by Jesus. We have this sense of caring for each other and working together in these causes. I challenge you, is that how we feel about our community? I'm sure some of you don't like each other. I'm sure some of you don't like me. I'm sure there's some people who feel like they're not liked by others. And in this way, it's hard for people when they start to get involved with the Christian community because they have this expectation that it's wonderful and we all love each other and we're all working toward the same good. It's not quite true. But there is another point to it. Because there's something greater than just community, there's something that binds us together, that orients us the right direction. Community can be good in its challenges. Even if we don't like each other, we learn what it's like to care for each other, even if they hurt us. We learn such things as working together for a single cause. We learn virtue as we fight to become one unified group, as opposed to a bunch of people doing their own thing. So there is a good in community, but it's not what we should necessarily expect right off the bat. It takes some work. Some people come to the Christian religion because they expect it to bless them, and then everything will go well from that point forward. I'm sure you've heard this before, that because of what Jesus did, we can now be free and everything will work out and life is great. This is actually the Jewish faith. The Jews believe that if you just follow the commandments and do what God asked, your life will be blessed, your family will be great, you'll have lots of wealth and prosperity, it'll be awesome. Yeah, not quite. So in response to that, we do have this sense that Jesus does provide, that things will go well. He does teach us that we will have a sense of peace, a sense of tranquility, a hope for the things to come. But that's not the end of it all, because we also know that many of us have suffered greatly or have lots of challenges. So we can't just say the hallmark of Christianity, the expectation for it, is that everything works out, everything goes well. So what can we expect? What can we expect from the Christian faith? The answer is very simple. Suffering, death, and resurrection. I know, this is what we're all looking forward to. We're all like, yeah, let's go suffer. That's the way we want it to be. Yeah, death is a great thing. Let's go for it. Which is why it's so challenging for us. This is the central proclamation of the Christian faith. So much so that even all the sacraments and this church itself ebbs with this proclamation. Suffering, death, and resurrection. Look it up there. We have a crucifix, not a resurrectifix, for a purpose. We know that there's value in suffering. We come here to unite our sufferings with Jesus, that it can do something. We want that symbol so we don't get so out of touch with the world that we forget who we are. Look around the building. What are the images we have? What's lit up is the 14 stations of the cross, the passion and death of Jesus. They're not the happy-go-lucky images of everyone happy-go-lucky running around a tree or something like that. In the same way, this whole building is shaped with a cross on the front and looks like a coffin. Everything about this building ebbs death. And that's a good thing. Because in the midst of the suffering and challenges we see in the very art of this building, it calls us to see something greater, which is resurrection. Even our sacraments are ebbing with this idea of passion, death, and resurrection. Look at the Mass. What do we start with? Bread. Where does bread come from? You take grains of wheat that have died, crush them up, and make bread. Where does wine come from? You take the grapes, you squeeze them, kill them, and then make wine out of it. In this way, they've died to become something different. And then here they become something even more. And then once we eat them, they enter into us. They give us life. So that from the death of the plants and the rising inside of us, we get a sense of the death and resurrection of Jesus. Look at baptism. Although here I get to kind of pour water, but if I could and do full immersion, I'd plunge that person into the water and hold them there so they feel like I'm going to drown. I'm about to die here. So that as we pull them out of the water, they're like, yes, new life. That's how the church experienced it. Plunging into the water has that sense of death. And then coming out had new life, that they felt the power of baptism, that it brings us new life. All seven sacraments are the same. They all teach us about the passion, death, and resurrection of Jesus, that through them we experience this reality. But I want to go on a different track. I want us to experience it as a daily call, because this is our greatest joy, to live the passion, death, and resurrection, to live suffering, death, and resurrection. This is the call of the Christian. Now, many people may think, hey, I don't really want to suffer. That's nice. We are all going to incur some sort of suffering. And one of the big challenges is we like to dismiss it. We like to ignore it. We want it to go away. Instead of cultivating it in our lives, embodying it, let it become part of who we are. Suffering can be a good thing. Suffering reminds us that the world is not perfect. It reminds us to seek something greater. There's something better out there. It perfects in us the virtues that we can live good lives. In the same way, it orients us. It orients us to God who also suffered, that we may come to know him, come to walk with him in his passion. But suffering isn't good of its own. It points us to death. By suffering, we realize that there's something important in ourselves. We look at our own humanity and realize the joy of death. That we can die to the things that don't bring us joy. We can die to the things of the world. We can die to our own passions and desires. And by doing so, death leads us to life. That's the end goal. That's where we stop. Resurrection. So by suffering, we orient ourselves to God. By dying to the things of the world, we experience what true life is like, with the goal that eventually we experience the true life, which is life in heaven. All these things are our central proclamation as they guide us to that reality. That guide us through the challenges of the world to seek God, to desire him, and to want life in him. That is our joy, that life at the end. And so I challenge you, take up this challenge. See suffering not as this thing to get rid of, but a thing to embrace, a thing to explore, a thing to guide us through this life, that we may see it in it, the joy of death and resurrection, that we may unite ourselves with Jesus, who suffered, died, and rose, and come to new life through it. This is the great joy we have, because through it we experience the joys of heaven.